Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for September 23rd, 2012. I'm your very happy host, David McLaughlin. I'm happy because my candidate is leading in almost every poll they show lately, and my team is now 3-0 after just beating San Diego. But passing on to welcome Tim Shiflett as always.
Good evening, sir, and I'm equally happy that the New Orleans Saints are 0-3. Just thought I'd get that dig in.
Yeah, I try to keep it positive. And we're very excited to have, sitting in for Catherine, who's traveling up to Michigan, Miss Juliana Alari. And Juliana, I believe you've been on the show before, but never as a guest host.
That's right. Pleasure to be here.
Yes, we're glad to have you. Well, we got a lot of topics. In the second half of the show, we'll go ahead and preview and say that Lowell Feld of BlueVirginia.us is going to be our special guest. He's been on a handful of times before to talk about Virginia politics, which is always a very competitive southern state, and this year is no exception. But in the meantime, we're going to have all kind of topics to discuss. And I guess the biggie, because it happened, it really came out maybe the day after last week's show, but it has a Georgia basis. Casa Carter was the one taped it or got it out to the public. Mitt Romney basically said 47% of the people will never vote for him, which that part wouldn't have gotten him in trouble. But then he went off and said that's because, you know, basically they're just, you know, low-account deadbeats that want to live off the government, basically, is what he insinuated. I'm sure his whole quote was a little too long to read word for word. Juliana, could you believe that he was so politically dumb or tone-deaf to say that?
Well, I think he was at a party, albeit a $40,000 a plate dinner party, where, you know, he felt very comfortable speaking to his contemporaries, other very rich people such as himself, in Boca Raton. And, you know, these are probably very much how he believes the rest of us conduct ourselves, that we're all moochers. And, you know, I mean, he was one step away from calling people welfare queens, but, you know, I kind of think that is how he believes, you know, 47% of the country to be. I don't think that we saw a secret with Mitt Romney. I think we saw the real thing. And one of the quotes that was flying all around Facebook after that was Maya Angelou's very pithy quote where it says, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them. And I think that was very apropos that day on Facebook.
Yes, Tim, how shocked were you by this?
Oh, gee, what a silly thing for him to get caught saying, especially did they not learn anything after the essentially the same thing happened to President Obama in 2008. You have always got to be careful. You cannot plan on no cameras being there or no audio showing up. And you know, let's look at that 47% for a minute. First of all, 8 of the top 10 states with non-payers of income taxes, federal income taxes, are Republican states. Georgia is one of them, by the way. 8 of the 10 states are in the South, right in the middle of the red belt. But the people themselves, many of them are the working poor. These people still pay payroll and sales taxes. Over 10% of this group are seniors, retired people. The one group that stayed with John McCain in 2008, did you know that over 1,000 of these people in this 47% are millionaires? Did you know that all soldiers in combat areas are included in this group, along with students? I mean, what could he possibly have been? Surely he doesn't believe this. And if he does believe it, it just reinforces people's idea that he's essentially an out-of-touch guy that has nothing in common with them, and that's been plaguing him all year, right?
Yes, it's, what's funny is I don't think he needed this to lose the election, but yet this almost cements it. And it almost exposes him, and I've never really accused him of this, of being dumb. And this is how I think it went down. I think in one of his, you know, campaign manager meetings, if you will, one of his consultants said to him, Mitt, 47% of the electorate will never vote for you. And that was a true statement. They're called Democrats. And you know, a lot of them are probably millionaires. A lot more of them are probably just hardworking folks that have to earn a living more than anything else. Because when you get into those people that are, you know, living off the government, some of those are Republicans, like you've listed all kind of groups, Tim. And I think that really exposes a new layer that people may not be looking at. This guy's really not as bright as we might have thought. And that's not necessarily the first thing I would have thought about when you have people like Rick Perry and George W. Bush to kick around. But it does go with a long tradition of the Republicans going back to about 1948. Of the Republicans electing the less or nominating the less intellectual candidate. Juliana, what do you think of Mitt Romney's overall campaign? Tim and I debate this a lot on how bad a candidate he is. How bad or good a candidate do you think Mitt Romney is?
Well, I think he's, you know, this country does like to elect governors and congresspeople. And, you know, he's been running for the presidency for a very long time. One would think that he would have, you know, come up a learning curve, but it just seems to be very ponderous, very awkward. You know, on top of it, his wife overly complicates matters. You know, in a week where they were having a bad week, she admonishes the Republican, you know, consulting class or the Republican chattering class, you know, by saying that it's very difficult to run for president. And, of course, the obvious response then from the chattering class is all of us is to say, well, what do you think it's going to be like to be president? And so she looks out of touch on top of it. Sometimes, you know, potential first ladies can humanize a candidate, can maybe take some of, you know, the less attractive characteristics and make them, you know, brush them up a little bit. She seems to be just adding fuel to the fire with her horse at the Olympics and the tax cut and $77,000 for a horse. It's, you know, her car, elevator, Cadillacs, all that nonsense. So, you know, you would have thought they would have been behind all of this, you know, 8-10 months ago before they got into difficult primaries. But it just seems to be one thing after the next, just stumbling toward this election. And, you know, especially on top of it, the conservatives have been abandoning them. Other candidates are abandoning them. Senate campaigns are abandoning them. None of this smells good to me as far as the campaign goes. So, you know, you can only I give it a C minus.
Yeah. Tim, I got a related question for you. Did Michael Dukakis ever do anything this dumb?
You know, it is stunning that you would ask me that because I was just sitting here thinking of the 1988 campaign, and I'll tell you why. You remember how well Dukakis seemed to be doing all summer long, and yes, making that commercial with him riding around in the tank was pretty dumb. Sitting there taking it during the Willie Horton ads was pretty dumb. But where this thing turned, and where I think the election in '88 started to turn, was during the conventions. 1988, President Bush had the convention speech. He had the speech of his life during that convention. They had a terrific convention. He got a 12-point bounce out of that convention, one of the biggest ones ever. This year, the Republicans missed a golden opportunity with what charitably can only be described as an underwhelming convention. It was just almost a disaster. What's the one thing the American people remember about each convention? Well, if it's the Democrats, they remember all those sparkling speeches headlined by Bill Clinton's riveting talk. And what do they remember about the Republican convention? An empty chair. Since that time, Barack Obama's had the wind at his back as the gaffes have piled up. It's some of it's Romney's fault, but some of it is his campaign people's fault. I don't know what they were thinking with Clint Eastwood. I still haven't figured that out.
And Clint Eastwood just this week said it's your fault. And I'll tell you one more thing that's even crazier that goes back to Mitt Romney. And, Tim, I sent you and Catherine an email, and this was very early in the week when I read it. Sorry, Juliana. He gave these clowns bonuses. How big were those bonuses he gave? Now, that's maybe been an all total.
Oh, $200,000.
Yeah.
$200,000. And on top of it, he took a loan out to give those bonuses.
I mean, so then the responsibility comes back to him for rewarding this. I tell you, the email I sent to Catherine and Tim, I'll let all the listeners know about it. I said, I may not want him as president, but I'd love to have him as my boss, because if I could give that kind of performance and get a six-figure bonus, for coming up with the chair, among other things, then,
some people
to please him.
Yeah, some people don't look at those as bonuses. They look at those as begging people to stay money. So kind of throwing money at you to not abandon the ship, because there are people already skirmishing in the media, saying it's not my fault. They've just started the finger pointing so that they can get jobs, on campaigns next cycle. So, some people just look at those as, throwing money at you to stay.
And let me ask you a question, Julia. Ani, do you believe that Tim Pawlenty would have left that campaign and taken that job that he took at this time, a national co-chair of Romney's campaign? Do you think that he would have jumped ship and taken that job if Romney's campaign was doing well?
Absolutely not.
There you go.
I mean, and most people would say, okay, a co-chair hangs in there, a potential appointment, something in the future for them, whatever it is that is their ambition. And I think most people still believe that Pawlenty will run for president. Obviously he sees a need to distance himself. I find it hard to believe that his future employers couldn't have waited until after November 6th for him to come on board. It's very clunky.
Yeah.
For the campaign. It's awkward and clunky for them to try to explain.
Yeah, and that says all that we need to say about the state of the Republican Party. Tim Pawlenty believes he can run for president in 2016 and win the nomination when he will have left office from Minnesota's governorship for 8+ years at that point. I mean, that shows you how weak the Republican Party bench and brand are if he thinks he's got a realistic shot at winning.
Yep.
Well, let's kind of keep moving through. And since we're staying with the Romney part of the campaign, I'll stay consistent, but I'll move on to his number two guy. Paul Ryan went to an AARP convention. We're talking older white voters, also with a little bit of money, because, just your average Waffle House waitress that might be 62 years old is probably not going to the conventions. You might get the magazine, but probably not doing that. They, I mean, this is basically the Republican Party, the Romney-Ryan wheelhouse. They booed Paul Ryan. I mean, just flat out openly booed him when he attacked Obamacare, apparently, you know, the signature issue for Republicans. Giuliani, how big a deal is this?
I think it was quite a large deal, and his reaction to it was also a little disturbing. He had that smirk on his face, which seems to be issued to you when you run for office in the Republican Party these days, because Romney's been sporting the same smirk. But, you know, it's these are the same people that helped change the Congress in 2010. These are the same folks who supported the Republican Party. And, you know, for them to be booing him, very, very disturbing. First of all, you know, seeing older people boo someone is a little striking. That's not typically behavior you see on folks at, you know, conventions where, you know, they tend to be a little bit more reserved. So, I think it was a pretty big deal. Of course, it's a YouTube sensation now. It was all over Twitter within minutes. You know, there's not even an opportunity for them to say, well, what he was trying to say, it's boom, it's out there, it's done. You know, you're now chasing that headline. And that's, again, indicative of what we've been seeing for the last at least 45 days with this campaign.
Yeah, I mean, Tim, this was supposed to be the big turnaround, the shining light of the future of the Republican Party. And he goes out and gets booed. You know, this is looking like a net negative for the Romney campaign.
Well, it was inevitable this was going to happen. Harry Truman first proposed Medicare in 1948. And for the next 17 years until Lyndon Johnson signed it into law in 1965, the Republican Party fought its very inception tooth and nail. And it's very disingenuous of them to turn around at this point in time and to attempt to set themselves up as its protector when that convention full of people knows the history of Medicare, knows which party has brought it into being and nourished it and protected it. They know better than that. He was talking to an audience of educated people. And he got booed for standing there and saying stuff that simply just isn't true. And plus, you know, we all know the story that in his budget, he proposes exactly to the dollar the same cuts that the president, you know, got passed in the health care law. So, you know, it's just a huge mistake for the Republicans to take this issue on. They shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, it seems like a loser for them, but it's the core of who Paul Ryan is.
And I have a question about that. You know, here he goes and he gets booed. I mean, does he expect to be booed, or does he expect them to cheer wildly for him because he invokes, you know, their grandchildren's future, whatever, you know, it is that they, these buttons that they think they're pushing. I mean, does he really believe that this is in the best interest for these folks? I mean, because you can be 50 years old and be part of AARP. You're not necessarily coming in, you know, at 80 plus years old in a walker. I mean, these are folks who have many years of life left. I mean, so does he think this is a good idea to say? I was just puzzled by it. I thought for sure it might be retooled and softened in some way for this particular audience. But he rolled it right out there like they shouldn't, you know, be upset with him. And I'm baffled by that.
Well, the reason I think that he did, the reason that I think that he did is because he looks at the same data that we all look at. He knows that senior citizens were the one group who stayed with the Republican Party, even in a year they got swamped in 2008, he believed that he would at least get polite applause. I don't think he was expecting half the place to boo him. And I thought maybe he figured we could use some of this footage for a campaign commercial. Hey, I guess not.
Well, yeah, someone's going to use it for a campaign commercial.
For the wrong campaign. Well,
yeah, really.
Think this goes to the core of what, you know, the core battle between the Democratic and Republican parties. They're particularly Tea Party folks, but Republicans in general believe, you know, it's about me, what's best for me. And then the Democrats believe what's best for we, us. And so this is just the core argument. And you take almost any issue, and that's exactly what you could boil it down to, be it Medicare, taxes, education. It's about me and maybe my family, the people that live under my roof at best, or what's best for my community. Tim.
But, David, they are making a political mistake. What did Bill Clinton say on the very night he got elected? I'm going to focus like a laser beam on the economy. That is what the Republican campaign should have been doing, win, lose, or draw, all year. When they take on the issue of Medicare, they are playing right into our hands 6 weeks before an election. It is pointless to do this. Ryan's plans are already out there. We know what they are. He should have gone to that convention and talked about the economy, period, and nothing else. At this point, nothing else matters.
When we talk about the economy, we talk about things like the unemployment rate. But honestly, for a lot of Republicans that have a job, one of the, you know, 90-plus percent folks that have jobs that are Republicans, they think, okay, this is what I need out of the economy. I need my 401k or whatever profit retirement plan I have in addition to Social Security, which they probably don't believe in. I need that to do well. And then I need the economy good enough so I can get taxed. They're not at risk, or they think they're not at risk of losing their job. Therefore, that's not what they're focused on.
Well, let me put it another way to both of you to answer for me. What else could they possibly talk about this year? Why would they talk about anything else? That's got to be their issue. It's got to be. I mean, that's all they have.
Tim,
I wasn't alive in 1964, but from what I gather, Barry Goldwater talked about whatever Barry Goldwater was interested in. And, of course, he lost his tail off. And the only reason that Mitt Romney hadn't yet lost his tail off is because of the unemployment rate, but he still may yet. If we give him long enough, he better hope this election's in November, because if they held the thing over to, say, March, he might lose by Goldwater proportions. But that, I think a lot of these Tea Partiers, which Paul Ryan is one of, and Mitt Romney thinks he has to be one of since they run the Republican Party, they just want to talk about what they want to talk about. They're not trying to get the swing voters to much. They want to, you know, have their little club and believe in what they believe in.
Well, look. Here's another question. All three of us have worked in campaigns. Don't we all three see Romney's campaign just blowing this thing, just blowing what was a pretty decent opportunity, at least to carry this election late into the night on election night? They had an opportunity, and they have systematically blown most of their chances now to win.
Well,
I'll
tell you this. I don't think they've blown the election. And you know why? Because they've never had the lead to blow it. To me, you actually have to have the lead to show where you could have won to blow it, and he's never even gotten that close. Because people fundamentally like Barack Obama, the person, and they think that there's been poll after people, the mess was caused by the Republicans and George Bush, and they don't like Mitt Romney. I don't know if they could have found a Republican that they liked, but if they could find one, it might have been a closer election. Juliana?
I agree with you with everything that's been said. I was working the North Georgia Fair on Thursday night, and we had a man come up to us who was wearing a Don't Tread on Me ball cap, and he started to harangue us about the debt and so forth, and he had his talking points. And, you know, I just don't ever really believe I'm going to convince anybody who believes what they believe so strongly, and he's approached us in the Cobb County Democratic Party booth, so he knew where he was coming. And we started to talk, and he says, well, I don't really like Romney. And I said, oh, so you're going to vote for Gary Johnson then? And he just looked puzzled. He said, well, no, I got to vote for him. I was like, well, no, you don't. You don't have to vote for President Obama, but you also don't have to vote for Mitt Romney. And I think he didn't know what I was talking about. So,
yeah,
I'm, if I talk to other people who don't like the president, but also who don't like Mitt Romney, I'm going to continue to suggest Gary Johnson to them. Maybe there's something to like about Gary Johnson.
Well, and maybe if the Republican, we've said this for years, particularly in the South, our best hope in the short term is for the Libertarian Party to siphon off Republican votes so we can get a plurality. Now, of course, now with the laws, with the runoffs, that's not as good an option as it would be, but at least it's a hope to grow from. So I think that's an interesting tactic. If the election continues to go the way it is, maybe it's particularly in places like Cobb County, where you're from, that might be a really good attack angle.
Look at the big picture, David. 1% of the national vote peeled off by these people. It's close to 1.5 million votes that Mitt Romney would have gotten. You spread that over some states like one we're going to be talking about, Virginia, for instance, with those close races up there. It could affect the whole national election. Certainly Senate elections and things like that.
Yeah,
In 2008, I believe President Obama, you know, lost by somewhere around 200,000 votes, which, you know, it sounds like a lot, but, you know, I imagine there are probably at least 200,000 people in the state of Georgia don't think Mitt Romney's all that in a bag of chips, so.
Yeah. Well, let's continue on to another group that may not be as excited about Mitt Romney. And that would be Hispanic voters that the Univision Forum was targeted towards. This took place this last week, and there were two controversies coming out of it. One, Mitt Romney decided he needed to, you know, darken up or maybe orange up a little bit. Maybe my TV's bad when I saw the clips of it. But he self-tanned, they believe. And then the second one was the way he bussed in supporters that apparently violated the rules. Juliana, which one do you think was the bigger problem for the election?
Well, I think the pandering, is that what they're calling the makeup problem? Or the I think that visually is quite startling and is one of those things you can't ignore. But the more information that is coming out about how they disregarded the rules of the forum and then held Governor Romney's attendance hostage with the organizers is quite profound. To me, it speaks to an arrogance about how they're going about with this forum. You know, they didn't really want to go to it to begin with. They were grudging about it. And it just seems to me that if you've got to bus your supporters in, you know, and they didn't just bus any supporters in. These were very rowdy activists from all around Southern Florida. These weren't just, you know, maybe local people from the local Romney campaign office. I mean, these were folks who they very much wanted to be in those seats. I think, though, in the end, when, you know, you sort of saw him being much more relaxed, answering the questions, knowing that pretty much anything that flew out his mouth was going to get cheered, I don't think this, again, going back to the campaign strategy, helps him at all, because he's got three more debates coming up, well, two debates in a town hall, and if he thinks that everyone's going to cheer for anything he says at the next three debates, I think he's got another thing coming. I mean, I think people are going to look at those answers and dissect those answers, see some of them as, oh, well, my economic plan is, you know, one page long, but you're going to love it after I'm president, as really quite lacking. So I think the more that people, you know, we're still quite distracted by the 47% comments this week and this weekend, and, you know, that's being parodied everywhere. But people who truly are following this particular story, how they disregarded the rules, they should really be quite concerned. And I believe that the folks at Univision felt that they had been very much disrespected, because it was supposed to be a forum, not a rally, and it at times had that rally-like vibe to it. Also, he only spoke for about 35 minutes. He didn't give them the full hour that the president gave them. So there's a lot of concerns with how this was approached by the campaign, and I felt some of it was quite disrespectful.
Yes, well, although they might have been lucky, whatever they put on after he got off in that extra 15 minutes might have gotten better ratings, so could have helped them there. Tim, I have never self-tanned. I will admit that I did one time put peroxide in my hair. I was like in eighth or ninth grade. This is a 60-year-old man that's a grandfather now. What in the world was he thinking? On either score.
I don't know. Now, you know, it's funny how things in this campaign keep reminding me of other times and other campaigns. And, of course, there's the famous story of how awful Richard Nixon looked.
Exactly.
His debate with John Kennedy. Even before they went on the air, the network people there, the technicians turned to Nixon's people and said, you know, does he look all right to you? And they said yes, and he didn't. He looked horrid. He was wearing that light-colored suit. He was sweating because he had that infection. And he was just ghostly looking, and contrasted with President Kennedy, who looked tanned and rested and in a dark suit and seemed to understand what television could do better. And as a result, people who listened to the debate on the radio scored it about even or thought Nixon had won. People who saw it on television thought Kennedy won. It's not about reality. It's about perceptions of reality. And Romney come across looking a little bit silly on this thing. And as Juliana mentioned, you know, he broke the rules, David. They had agreed to all this stuff, even the disposition of the tickets. A third of them were going to go to the networks. A third of them were going to go to the campaigns to give out. And a third of them were going to go to the University of Miami. And at the last minute, Romney threatened to cancel if Univision didn't allow his campaign to bus in supporters, which he did.
Yeah. And once again, it's the campaign not knowing the rules or not wanting to follow, causing problems there. So it's kind of, you know, malfeasance on their part again.
Yep.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sure they felt after the week that they had had that they needed something to bolster his confidence. And they thought this perhaps may have been the way to do it, pack the room with people who agree with you, are going to cheer every word you say. And, you know, this would give him then, you know, maybe then he wouldn't look so stricken or rigid or, you know, the way he's looked in the past at public events, which you know, just makes me uncomfortable, sets my teeth on edge when I look at his body language. And to go back to what Tim was saying about visuals, 80% of all communication is visual. And unless you're blind, and by blind I mean, you know, you're on the radio or, you know, you're distracted, you're not watching it, you're listening to it from another room or something, which is the way I was doing. I was listening to it on my laptop while I was getting ready to go somewhere else. And I missed the whole, you know, color of his, you know, complexion at that point, and was just listening to this crowd, and I'm thinking, my gosh, have I misread this campaign? Is South Florida this rabid for Romney? And, you know, sure enough, as we dug into it, then you learned what the scoop was. But, you know, yeah, it was quite startling to see it all over, you know, that, you know, pandering, as they say. Again, it was just everywhere. You couldn't go anywhere the next day and not see a picture of it.
Yes, and so. I guess the final point on this, if I stacked up all of Mitt Romney's problems, I wouldn't put his complexion as one of them. He doesn't seem, you know, ghostly white or pasty or any of those words. So it was just a very unnecessary fix to make a news story out of. Well, let's transition over. We're going to go a little north of Miami up to another part of the ACC and welcome in Lowell Feld from Virginia. Welcome back.
Oh, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Wanted to talk to you about all the different things in Virginia, and I guess we'd start off with the presidential race. There's been a lot of states that are considered swing states that have kind of moved a little bit, you know, maybe a larger Obama lead, a smaller Obama lead, maybe a small Romney lead. But Virginia, even though it's a very much emerging purple state, emerging swing state, it's stayed more consistently with a comfortable lead for the president.
Mm-hmm.
What have you seen this as well, and why do you think that is, Lowell?
I think that actually, if anything, it's gotten a little bit better in recent weeks for the president. Right now, Real Clear Politics average has it plus 0.4.5 for Obama. And we've just had the Washington Post did a poll, showed Obama up 8 in Virginia among likely voters. So that was very good. Fox News, of all people. I mean, if Fox News says you a Democrat is leading, you know that's pretty good. So Obama up 7. That was just the 16th through the 18th of September. They did that poll. So I actually think it's gotten a little better. We'll get more to the Senate race, I'm sure. But actually, Kane's gotten better significantly in the last week. But we can get to that. As far as Obama, though, again, I think he's been leading pretty consistently. That's correct. In Virginia, he of course won Virginia 4 years ago. First time since Lyndon Johnson, you know, won Virginia. First time a Democrat has done so. And right now it's looking, you know, pretty good that he's going to do it again. And I think, you know, that's one of the states that's going to make it, as you know, very difficult for Romney to get to 270. So I'm pretty happy about that, but not counting chickens or anything, because we've got to keep the pedal to the metal for the next 6 weeks. So make sure we, you know, bring this one home and not just just assume that we're going to win. But, yeah, it's looking good right now.
Yes, you mentioned the Fox News poll, and that's kind of been a recurring theme with their polling organization. It's been maybe trended a little more Democratic than the average poll, which I guess if you said I had to go hang out with the Fox Morning team or the polling team, I'll choose the polling team every time. They at least sound like they want to report the facts.
Well, that's good.
At
least one part of their outfit actually reports, like their slogan, what we report, you decide. Yeah, I mean, usually that's not the case. Maybe in this case it actually is. But, you know, and Nate Silver has Virginia as, I think it's around 70%, something like that, chance for Obama, something around there. Well, he's got it, I'll just double check, 72.8% for a chance for Obama winning it right now. So, you know, looking pretty good. Obama's been coming to Virginia a lot. Joe Biden and, of course, on the other side, Romney and Ryan, they're all beating a path to Virginia. We see them seems like every other day. And then the other thing is ads, constant. I don't know if you guys are getting, because Georgia isn't considered a swing state, I guess, this cycle, but we're getting deluged with advertising, and have been for many months now. I mean, from super PACs, particularly from the super PACs for Romney, and that's been going on since last spring. It seems I think it was right after Romney clinched the nomination, it started up, and it's been almost nonstop. And it doesn't seem to be making much difference, though, which is really fascinating to me. All these millions of dollars they're spending on these ads, TV ads, I mean, there's no sign of the polls really moving. And it's not just in Virginia. I mean, it's like Ohio, you're seeing that, too. Sherrod Brown maintaining a lead there, and a number of states. I mean, you know, it's very interesting. But we've been you turn on the TV here, and you see, the chances are within about a couple minutes, you're going to see an ad for either Obama or Romney. So something to look forward to.
Well, I don't know. You may have listened to last week's episode, but we actually talked about how much money that is spent on campaign ads, yet very little of them are seen because so much television's DVR'd. So that may be why it's not moving the polls, even though they're spending millions of dollars on campaign ads. Well, Lowell, I have on, as always, two guest hosts, but a different guest host this time, Ms. Juliana Ollari, instead of Catherine Smith. I'm going to put her questions about presidential race, maybe the U.S. Senate race, then she'll give it to Kim, and if it comes back around to me, I'll probably have some questions for you.
Sounds great.
Good evening. Since I'm sitting in for Catherine, she generally will ask folks from other states a little bit about their state party operation. So I would be remiss if I was not channeling Catherine here for just a minute to ask you how your state party is functioning. Is it kind of generally a good party, or is it kind of regionally based, or do your county committees have a lot of control and influence? Help us have a little sense of that.
It's interesting because, you know, there's sort of been this, I think, you know, Marcos Boulitsos and Jerome Armstrong wrote a whole book on this, Crashing the Gate, but there's sort of a divide between the grassroots and the party people. I think there is some of that. Definitely that's true. I don't, you know, I deal with the party here, but I mostly deal with the other grassroots organizations in Virginia. My take on the party here is it's, I think state Democratic parties are pretty weak in most states, probably, that I've seen. I don't think it's super strong. They've been in debt for years. I think they're getting out of that finally. I think they're in better shape than they've been in the past. But I don't think it's really a powerhouse organization in and of itself. I think what the state party is used for, to a large extent, is to basically take sort of whoever's running for governor or whoever's running for U.S. Senate, whatever the top office is, and basically to help them in whatever way they can. The money, you know, maybe goes through the party. Maybe they can get lower rates on mailing or whatever. So they do that. The county committees definitely. Virginia's a large state with some powerful, very large counties with very active committees. So they're definitely powerful here as well. So, but I wouldn't say I'm an expert on the state party. I don't deal with them that much. As I said, I'm mostly focused on the grassroots. So, I think the Kane campaign and the Obama campaign are mostly doing their thing. And I think they're doing a great – I mean, both those campaigns are extremely well-run. They're extremely active. Obama's got, I think, a couple dozen offices open in Virginia. Kane campaign's doing great, raising money. They've got their grassroots supporters. So, I mean, they don't really, frankly, need the party that much, I don't think. But, you know.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong. It does appear that Kane and some of the congressional candidates, you know, feel like the president's coattails are pretty long, and they're happy to be part of that. I think I recently saw a yard sign by some volunteers on a Facebook page. I live sometimes in Alexandria, and I've done a little bit of you know, volunteering up in that area last summer for Adam Eben. And it seemed, and I became friends with some of the operatives up there, and it seemed to me that it says, you know, it's Obama, Kane, and say maybe Moran, and they, you know, they're all connected, and
mm-hmm.
it's very clear, you know, the down ballot folks are all about the president. I'm not sure every state is like that. If some of the down ballot folks have distanced themselves from the president for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
They may regret that now, but
right.
they did
well,
it earlier in their campaign. So.
Well, Alexandria, I live right north of Alexandria in Arlington. Well, this is deep
mm-hmm.
blue Virginia.
Right.
Okay? This
oh,
is
yeah.
inner suburbs of Washington, D.C. here for people
mm-hmm.
you know, who aren't familiar with this area. This is heavily Democratic. Okay. So. Someone like Jim Moran, who's my congressman, 8th District
mm-hmm.
congressman, is a you know Democrat, obviously. And, and I say obviously because this district voted 70% or so, 72%, I forget exactly, but for Obama in 2008. So that's approximately what you're talking about here. But a lot of other districts in Virginia are either red or leaning red, or they're maybe blue but lighter blue. You know, not like this deep blue, but anyway, so yeah, just give you a little background on that. But someone like Jim Moran definitely is going to want to be associated as closely as possible with Obama and Kane. In some of the swing districts or more reddish districts or red districts, then yeah, I mean, that's a question for candidates, what their strategy is going to be in that regard.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
Good evening, Lowell, and welcome back to the Kudzu Vine.
Oh, thanks.
Listen, you know, there's been a lot of news about the Republicans fighting tooth and nail to keep Virgil Goode off the ballot up there.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of effect will he have being on the ballot?
Well, first of all, just an update. I don't know if you're aware of this, but he is now on the ballot. I mean, just the end of last
uh-huh.
week, he was actually, of all people, our state's attorney general, Ken Cuccinelli, who is extremely right-wing and pretty much fairly infamous at this point, even around the country. But he, you know, this went to the attorney general's office, and he issued a ruling that there were some irregularities, whatever that means exactly, but in Virgil Goode's signatures, but that they weren't sufficient to knock him off the ballot. So he's on the ballot. The latest poll I saw with Goode in it was the public policy polling about one week ago, the 16th of September, and it basically showed that these third-party candidates didn't make just about any difference at all. I mean, Goode was at like 2%, and Gary Johnson at 2%, and Jill Stein, who's the Green Party candidate as well, at 1%. And basically, it didn't seem to draw strongly from one or the other. I think if Goode had some money, I think if he could get his message out there, he might, especially in the district where he represented, the 5th Congressional District that he represented for years, I could see him potentially getting into the, maybe in a district like that, up to even 10%. I don't know. Hard to say. But I don't think he does. I don't think he has any resources to get his message out. And so I don't know. I used to think that Goode would have an impact. Honestly, at this point, I'm not really seeing it. And I'm also seeing Obama with a outside the margin of error, as they like to say in pollster talk, you know, lead in Virginia, it seems, at this point, probably about, you know, four points, five, maybe even more in Virginia. So I don't think it really matters unless it tightens up. I mean, you never know. Look, I mean, we saw what happened in Florida in 2000. I mean, where, you know, Pat Buchanan made a big difference, and
yeah.
Ralph Nader, you know. So, you know, you never know. But but I'm not seeing it with Goode right now. Unless he picks it up, steps it up somehow, monetarily and otherwise, I don't see him drawing much more than 1 or 2% of the vote here in Virginia.
Well, speaking of polls, no poll has shown Governor Romney ahead in Virginia in
mm-hmm.
about 2 weeks now.
I think it's more than that, maybe
that,
even. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking there was one back on the 8th, maybe, Gravis poll that showed
Romney with
1 or 2 point lead. And then there's been, like, I don't know, 8 to 11 major polls since then that showed the president with not only a lead, but a lead that was expanding.
Mm-hmm.
What propelled the president suddenly into such a commanding position in the polls there?
I mean, I think, you know, as I said earlier, I think he's been leading in Virginia. I think he's a little bit more – I think he's pulling ahead a little more. I don't think it's suddenly propelled him, you know, or anything like that. I just think he's been increasing it slightly. I think you're seeing that around the country. I think the convention – the Democrats mm-hmm. got a bounce coming out of the convention, and you've seen that around the country. I don't think it was anything particularly specific to Virginia. I mean, you're seeing it in Ohio, where it looks like Obama's got a mid-single digits lead, something like that, 5-6 points in Ohio. You're seeing it in all of these purple states, maybe a 1 point lead in Florida. That's very close. But, you know, before the conventions, Romney probably was maybe a little ahead in Florida. And Ohio was much closer. Virginia was a little bit closer. So I think a lot of it was the conventions. I mean, the Democrats had a great convention by most accounts, most every account I've read. And the Republicans, well, unless you liked Clint Eastwood's chair routine, it didn't work for me, but, you know, maybe it did for somebody. But, you know, the Republicans' convention generally didn't receive those kind of rave reviews that the Democratic one. I think Bill Clinton particularly, I just got to say, I mean, that guy is amazing.
Absolutely.
He is amazing. I think he made a very strong case for Obama, but also shot down one after the other, every single, not every single, there's so many, but one after the other, some of the major lies that the Republicans have been telling about Obama. Bill Clinton just methodically, calmly, not angry or anything like that. He just went through and demolished them. And I think that's been helping. I think that convention bounce. I read Nate Silver, 538, and at the New York Times all the time. And I mean, he's been watching it very closely to see if that convention bounce holds or if it starts to erode. And there may be a little bit of erosion, but it does seem like the Democrats got a bounce out of that. And I think that's a lot of it. Another interesting thing is that just came up, you know, and maybe this has already had a little bit of an impact, but Romney doesn't have as much money as we thought he had. Turns out he ran into a little bit of a speed bump there. He borrowed like $10 million, and now he has to pay it back. And, you know, so maybe he's not going to have as much money to run ads. I've been seeing a lot more Obama ads than it seems like. The ratio has gotten better in the last few weeks for Obama versus Romney here in Virginia. I don't know exactly what's causing that, but I remember when I used to turn on the TV a few months ago, it seemed like it was like Romney, 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 then Obama. Like, now it's like Obama, Kane, Obama, or, you know, Obama, Kane, and then like something else, and then Romney one maybe will come on, but nothing, you know, it's more even. So I think that's what I'd point to.
Okay, well, you might recall, I'm going to ask you one more question, and I'm going to turn it back over to David to close it out, but you might recall I asked you this question when we had you on before, and I want to pose it to you again for your
mm-hmm.
best guess. Will Cain and Obama both win or both lose Virginia, or can one of them win and the other one lose? Which
mm-hmm.
scenario is more likely?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, right now, just to give you the stat numbers on it, in the Real Clear Politics average, Cain is plus 4.4 points over Allen. He's had a surge in the last week or so, but he's at 4.4 up, and Obama's up 4.5, so almost identical. And I think that's about right. I mean, Obama has been prior to the last week or two, Obama had been outperforming Cain in Virginia. And I think part of it was, and I'm not a huge believer in TV ads, but I'll tell you, maybe I need to change that a little bit here, because Cain had not been on the air. And he'd been getting pounded for months by the super PACs, not even George Allen per se, but the super PACs supporting, mostly Karl Rove's outfit. It seemed like every 5 minutes I'd see an ad by hitting Kane by the Karl Rove people or whatever. So that now the Kane people are on the air. And it's kind of interesting, you know, that since he's been on the air, it seems like, and maybe it's just coincidence, maybe it was the convention as well. Kane spoke at the convention, but Kane has increased his, he's pulled out ahead into a, I think now he's got the edge. 4.4 is beyond the 3, plus or minus 3, whatever. He's got a, it seems like he's got the lead, definitely. I don't see, you know what, I don't really see who, who's going to vote for Obama and Allen? I can't no. think of who that person would be. Like, it's just a weird combination.
Schizophrenic?
What's that? Schizophrenic, yeah. Maybe yeah. there's like a large percentage of schizophrenic voters in Virginia. I mean, seriously, though, like, I don't see that. Maybe there could be a Romney, Kane voter. Kane was governor. He is popular. In a lot of parts of the state, his father-in-law Linwood Holton was governor years ago, and he was a Republican, and he's from Southwest Virginia. So Kane's got popularity in different parts of the state than Obama does, and so I could see there being potentially a Romney Kane voter, but I don't see any way there's like an Obama Allen voter. So if Obama wins the state, I think Kane wins the state. I mean, I don't see any. There's like 0.1%, not that low, maybe 1% chance that like Obama could win Virginia and Kane wouldn't. I just don't see it. And the polling numbers bear it out. They're like identical, just about 4.5 up for Obama, 4.4 up for Kane. So, like, you know.
Excellent analysis. Thank you, sir. David?
Oh, sure. So
yeah,
that's what you pay me the big bucks for, right?
Absolutely. Well, Lowell, maybe this is probably going to be a final question. George Allen, he lost his office when he was caught on video making a stupid statement.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of reminds me of two things that have happened recently. One was Todd Akin and his comments on legitimate rape.
Mm-hmm.
Just a dumb thing that he said that tanked his campaign. Very similar. Then this week, Romney getting recorded talking about the 47%.
Mm-hmm.
Have these two incidents kind of reminded people of the Macaca moment? Because to me, if it does, then George Allen's going to suffer all over again and really not have a chance.
Hmm. I haven't seen any sign of it directly reminding people of Macaca. You know, Kane and Allen had their first live televised debate this past week on Thursday. They had a debate, and David Gregory was the moderator. He actually asked specifically, you know, he asked about the 47% to Allen, and Allen dodged and weaved, and he didn't want to denounce Romney, you know, in the comments, but he didn't want to endorse them completely either. So it was like, you know, he did the politician thing basically, and just tried to wriggle out of it. So, but I don't think necessarily that reminds anyone of Macaca per se. It is interesting though that you can never assume. Macaca was one of the first incidents like this, but in that case, the guy wasn't hiding the camera. He was, you know, the guy who took the video of Allen when he said Macaca, he was standing right there with a big camera. It wasn't like, you know, and Allen turned to him and said, you know, this guy over here is filming me. So it's very different than what happened to Romney, where that was a hidden camera. But so anyway, I don't see that. And it's interesting, the Kane campaign hasn't been talking about Macaca, really. I don't know. I think that is a reflection to a large extent on Kane. He's more of a wants to tell a positive story. He doesn't want to really go there, I don't think. Unless he had to, maybe. I don't even know if he would then, but they haven't touched that really. I mean, some of the, you know, those crazy bloggers, you know, I mean, some of them have talked about it and tried to remind people of that. Not naming any names here.
He wants to win it the right way. The only problem is if he doesn't win it and, you know, other races like it, then we all suffer when the Republicans are in office. So the ends at times might justify some means, not all means.
Right.
Well, Lowell, thanks again for being on our show and keeping us updated on Virginia.
Sure thing. Absolutely. Hope you're doing well.
We are. We'll keep
reading. Thank you, sir.
Through Election Day.
All right. Yep. Take care.
Yes.
Thank
you. And
we've
got about a minute, maybe. And, Juliana, I want to give you the last question and give you a Georgia question, to be fair, since that's your home state. There were two polls that came out this past week. One showed Romney winning big in Georgia. The other showing Romney under 50, that thing tightening up. What was it, 6 points, Tim, that YouGov poll?
Yeah.
I think I sent y'all the link.
Yep.
Juliana, where do you think Georgia stands right now? And that'll be our final question.
I think that polling was about right. Although, the one thing about that poll, and I'm not a poll person to be able to understand them always, not really Matt's strong suit, but I was really alarmed at the 9% of the 18 to 29-year-olds that didn't intend to vote. You know, this is your future. These are the people who are going to decide the rest of your lives, you know, with a lot of policy stuff. And it just really makes me sad when I see, not that we may not vote, straight up saying, I'm not voting. So that was my takeaway from that poll.
Yes, and that'll be important, who turns out. Tim and I go back and forth on a lot of things, but I think he's definitely right. A lot of places this election is going to be decided on who turns out, because we know if a lot of folks turn out, then Democrats are in good shape. But if that dwindles, then that's where the big fear for us is. Well, Juliana, thanks for being on the Kudzu Vine tonight, and we may call on you again sometime.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for thinking of me.
Good evening, Tim.
Good night.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for